Hi, I'm Thomas Cook. Welcome to Making It and what that means to me.
Los Angeles, California, Chapter 12, Making It with Thomas Cook. Thomas, take it away now.
So you know how we always see the Hollywood sign? And that's in every single opening of California. It was one of those things I think every young person that ever wants to make it in show business or movies or producing or directing or acting or any of those things always dreams that Hollywood sign. Beverly Hills, Rodeo Drive, the mansions in Bel Air, the ocean in Santa Monica and Malibu. That's like one of those things. Are you tasting it? Are you seeing it? Are you living it? That was the California Dreamin'. California Dreamin'. That's the song, you know, the Beach Boys. That was definitely on my list, people. Making It. What was I gonna do in California? When I wrote my little wish list of all the things I wanted to do, I didn't write down Oscars, Emmys, Grammys, Kennedy Honors. I didn't write down Spielberg. And this was my journey that I wanted to go to California, and I wanted to sing like Michael Feinstein back then was like the first. He was the first kind of singer like Frank Sinatra and the Brat Pack. You know, he had brought back singing with a piano and really classical music. I was trying to fit that genre of who am I and what kind of music is it that I wanted to do. And I loved music and the piano. I loved writing music. I always wanted to write music about people's lives. You know, I'd written the songs for diabetes, for lupus, for so many diseases that I'd done, and it was a wonderful way to open the door to meet people. So I would get invited to do all these charity events and to sing and to write theme songs. I found my niche. So if you listen, people, and if you want to be a singer or an actor or somebody in show business, you gotta have a niche. You gotta be a little different than everybody else. You gotta create that magic. Because there's a lot of pretty people. There's a lot of talented people. The chances of making it in L.A., oh my God. They call it Sin City for a reason. Because, you know, it really is like going to Vegas. You just don't know. You don't know if you're going to be the really beautiful person that makes it, or you could be that character actor that is ugly as could be, and they need that in a movie. You just don't know what moment happens in your life that you meet somebody at a cocktail party or that you're in the grocery store and you see a celebrity and you're like, oh my God, there's so-and-so. You just don't know when you get that moment to say, hi, I would love a chance. So for me, when I went to LA, I wanted to kind of take my experience from singing, from Palm Beach, from New York, and I wanted to kind of do that in LA. So I kind of looked for clubs that existed in LA that I could turn that club or that room into like a piano bar, that I could turn into like a cabaret room or a supper club. Back then, supper clubs were so huge. Supper clubs would go and have dinner and see a show. It wasn't a Broadway show and it wasn't cabaret, but it was a supper club where you did great music. And I was getting a name for myself because I was doing, and if you go to thomascookdc.com, again, that's thomascookdc.com. If you go there, you can see some of my clips from my old days, which was so fun. But I was taking the Carpenters music and redoing it into some blues and jazz. I was doing Frank Sinatra. I was doing all the oldies but goodies, but I was giving them a little bit of a spin of romantic ballads with some great passion. It's funny, I got it somewhere in my collectibles, but I'll never forget Karen Carpenter. She had one of the most beautiful, beautiful voices I'd ever hear. I remember later on in my life, I had met somebody in my next chapter from here, you'll hear about when I moved to Acapulco. I had met somebody who said they were very good friends with Richard and Karen Carpenter. And I always loved her style, their style. And believe it or not, I got an autograph album back from Richard because I thanked them so much for the music. I created a show in L.A. called the Century City Club. Huge club. Mark, if you're listening or if you're out there, thank you for that. And also Errol Rappaport. He helped me so much, introduced me to so many people in L.A. And I'll never forget, I pitched the idea to Mark about doing a show there. And I loved it. It was fun. Vanna White, the girl that switches all the letters on Wheel of Fortune, was a co-host of the event, which was very cool. So yes, hello Vanna, if you're listening, because I still see you on TV flipping those letters. God bless you. She was flipping letters and selling mattresses back then. That was so fun. So that was my first show. During that time, there was another guy that came around called Harry Connick. Harry, wow, what a voice. He was a stud. You know, he was a guy off of a horse from the Midwest who had his all-American looks, great voice, great actor, and he was doing all these wonderful ballads as well. So we were all, now please, by all means, I wasn't in their league, but we were all doing the same thing at the same time. I was just on a very low totem pole of that at the same time. But that was my passion. That's what I wanted to do. During that time, I had been invited by my friend Errol Rappaport to meet some people. I met Junie Knapp. She invented the knapsack. And all of these folks, and their biggest passion is they were with the Beverly Hills Sister City program. And they were going to Acapulco to do some fundraising to help with ambulances and medical supplies and stuff like that with Sister City. So I got to meet the mayor of Beverly Hills, all these people. We went to Acapulco on our first trip. And during that time, there was a woman by the name of Lisa Renstrom. Lisa, if you're listening, wow, what a journey we went through. Thank you. And folks, if you're listening, this is a great story. We go to Acapulco for the first time. There was a place called the Villa Vera Hotel. The Villa Vera in Acapulco was the hotel that was the most prestigious place that all the stars went to. Elvis Presley did his first movie there called Acapulco. Julio Iglesias was there. Every single person you could dream of. Elvis was there, did a show. It was one of those places of the who's who. And we went with actors from The Love Boat. The Love Boat comes back. We went there with actors from The Love Boat, from Harold Burnett, Playmates. There was a whole bunch of us that all went. And Errol and Bob O'Ray, if you're listening, Bobby, love you, man. They put this whole event together with paddle tennis and all this stuff. And we went to this event, and Samantha was the young lady who became my roommate in LA. And we had the place together for almost 12 years. Love you, Sam, and her beautiful, beautiful daughters. Amazing girls. But we were single, fun, having a blast. It was a really amazing, amazing journey. It was so much fun to be part of this experience of Acapulco. It was exotic. It was during the time in Mexico where it was the top of the thing. Everybody was going there. It was so much fun. I'll never forget, I met Lisa after that first trip. I even met Victoria McMahon. She was the ex-wife to Ed McMahon from Johnny Carson. And Victoria and I, we became great friends. And I'll tell you about that later on during this story. And she became one of my dearest friends and took me under her wing. And I was just a kid. We ended up having a blast, playing tennis, meeting all these people. These were all the old shows. You know, Carol Burnett I loved. And I'll never forget Lyle Wagner and his wife. If you're listening, love you guys. Lyle had come up with an idea to do the Wagoneers. And I don't know if any of you know this, but on all the movies now, when you film a movie, you usually have the trailer and it's called a Wagoneer. That was his business. So he went from show business to making millions on renting trailers. So you never know. I'm telling you, folks, you never know where the big bucks come in. You might start off as an actor or a singer, and then down the road, something else happens, just like my life. Can't wait to tell you that later. But it keeps on building, so stay tuned. So here we are, singing, having a great time, doing all these wonderful things in Acapulco. I said to Lisa Renstrom, I said, Lisa, I live in LA, but I'd love to come back and forth. Here's my dream. I would love to design an indoor-outdoor club on the top of the mountain in Acapulco. I'd like there to be flowing drapes. I'd like there to be candles, hundreds of candles lit. I'd like it to be a place where everybody wants to come and listen to romantic music, you know, and create this atmosphere of this amazing five-star hotel you own that when her dad passed away, he left it to her. Lisa said, Thomas, I love your voice. I love your energy. She says, come up with an idea. And she says, go ahead and present it. And if it's something we can do, let's do it together. True story, guys. This is why I keep on telling all of you. If you have an idea, if you have a thought, throw it out there. You never know where the next journey comes and the next opportunity. Number one, I'd never built a club. I didn't know anything about business. All I knew is I wanted to create a place to sing, and I wanted it to be fun, and I wanted to bring everybody together because I was pretty good in personality and PR, but I didn't know what PR was back then. I was a singer. So I did this place. I got them all excited. Lisa said, all right, put the plan. I did the plan. Here's the thing. Guess what I called the place? I called my first club My Place. So if people at night said, where are you going tonight? Oh, we're going to My Place. So everybody felt like they owned it, that it was their place. So if anybody's listening wants to steal that name, you go right ahead. I think it's been recreated over and over again, but I love the name My Place. Hey, where are you going tonight? My Place. So it became an amazing journey. I had to come up with the architecture, the design. I had to work with people. I worked with Lisa. Let me tell you, in Mexico to get something done back then, ooh, it wasn't easy. I mean, I had a black and white checkered floor in the club with a baby grand piano, getting the lights done, getting the iron work done, getting, you name it, everything done, the pillows, the cushions, everything's hand done back then. We didn't have Walmart, Kmart. You couldn't even buy fish, chicken anywhere but their markets. We had nothing from the States coming in back then. Now there's Walmarts, Kmarts, there's everything. But it was, oh my God, I feel so blessed to have been part of Latin America in the days just before the old, old, old guard has moved on and passed on. Because I got to be part of that end cusp of the old Hollywood that used to go. And that's why today, to this day, I love Mexico. I love Acapulco. I love every one of my friends that I met there. And if you're all listening, God, I love you. And thanks for making that journey of Latin America be forever in my life. Guess what? We did the club. I packed my bags. I still kept the apartment in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills on Crescent Drive. Samantha, if you're listening, we were roommates. We kept that place for almost 12 years. I went back and forth. She traveled, she modeled, she did TV, she did Prince of Bel-Air, she did the Seinfeld show, all this stuff. You know, I told you I'd come back to Seinfeld when she was on the show. So we all lived together. It was so funny. I'd go back and forth, get my mail periodically. We're doing the show. I go for the opening, and the opening of My Place at the Villa Vera Hotel. Let's do that again. The opening of My Place at the Villa Vera Hotel in Acapulco, Mexico. It was so much fun. The opening was really cool. We ended up having, at that time, I had met a friend of mine. It took me almost 8 months or a year, 8 months, I think, to get the place built, designed, and ready to open. But during that time, I was singing at different events in Acapulco. And during that time, there was an Israeli, Argentinian, American friend. Her name is Batya Brickman. Batya Brickman, if you're listening, I love you. She started off in the hotel industry. She was started off as a bartender in her life when she first started, a teacher, a PA, a phys ed teacher. Then she became food and beverage. And then down the road, I met her in Acapulco, and she became the first general manager in the country of Mexico of a hotel. And back then, to be a woman and to be a general manager of a hotel in a macho, macho country was unheard of. Well, she and I Oh my God, we were best of friends. When I would have my days off, I would go to her hotel and would hang out and watch movies. And she'd let me order only once from room service because she didn't want me to take advantage of her position. So I'd order cheeseburgers, fries, ice cream sundaes. I just ordered as much as I could, and it was so much fun because I was living in a hotel. So I had room service, I had a housekeeper, I had bodyguards. It was a life. Oh my God, I look back at it now. I had my own villa, my own private pool. I look at it. That's why, remember this, people. When you are actually living the dream and it's right in front of you, take a breath, because you will blink, it will be over, and you will forget how much fun it was because you take it for granted. I think back now and I think, what a friggin' life. For 3 years, I lived in a hotel with room service for 3 years and dry cleaners and bodyguards and everything I ever dreamed of. So when I went back to my place eventually to LA, I was like, oh my God, I don't know how to cook. I don't know how to clean. I was like devastated. Okay, it wasn't that bad. We'll get to that in a moment. So I'm doing all these shows. While I'm doing that, while I'm building the club, I was asked to do this private show at a villa. And villas, if you don't know, are very large homes with very large bodyguards and lots of people and out of the movies. It was just so cool. I sat on this lady's lap. I was young. I was in my 20s. I didn't know anything about the culture of Latino or macho or anything. I was just a cute kid, fun, naive. And I remember sitting on this woman's lap and I was singing Over the Rainbow. And her face lit up and she was so happy while I was singing Over the Rainbow. And cut to 30 years later, I still sing that song to her, and she is one of the dearest people in my life, and her family. All of them, because in order to live in Mexico and do work back then, you would have to be adopted or have a madre or a madrina, a godmother, to do business in Mexico. So you would kind of have to have somebody to sponsor you. And after I sang Over the Rainbow to her, I got a note and she said, Thomas, this is Lupita. If you need a madrina, I will be a madrina. She actually was my godmother to help sponsor me for a business in Mexico. Now, my friend Arlene Jaffe, who I met in a pool with her daughter my first week, became my dearest friend who just passed away. And Arlene, I love you in heaven. And her family, I love them. They're all around. And she was an amazing spirit. And we would sit and watch sunsets every night and talk about life. So I asked her, I said, Arlene, what's a madrina? And she said, Thomas, if Lupita wants to be a madrina, I would take that invitation. That's a really nice invitation. Mrs. Lupita Molina, if you're listening, mwah, mwah, muchas gracias, mi amor. She actually took me under her wing, and her daughter, and Bob, her son-in-law back then, and her children. And at the time, they owned a little company called Pepsi. And Pepsi, not Pepsi like for the town, they owned Pepsi for the whole country. So trust me. You could never go to their house and order Coca-Cola. They would look at you with three eyes and it wasn't pretty. So only Pepsi. Their embrace, their love was something that opened so many doors, so many hearts, so much love between Batia and Arlene and everyone else that I met there. They opened their arms and overnight, overnight, there were billboards of me on the road. There were commercials on TV every hour. My life went from my saying, oh, I want to make it. We're going back to making it. So when I got on billboards and television and newspapers and I was written on all the social tabloids, I said to my mom and dad, hey, I made it. Okay, I'm not in America, I'm in Mexico, but I made it. So that was making it for me then in show business. And I met so many amazing people that truly helped change my life. And that went on for a couple of years, and I loved it, loved it, loved it. Traveled to Mexico City, did shows there. That's where I met Veronica. Miss Veronica, if you're listening, love you, and Miss Patty Molina. The two of them are like my crazy stepsisters with Batia, and we just laughed, and had so much fun and loved life. To be that carefree, literally to shut off and just love life for those years, wow. Wow, I needed that. That was my way to kind of look deep inside later on. And I'll never forget my friend Arlene, again, who I just told you, Arlene Jaffe, who just passed away. We were sitting on the beach, seeing the last sunset for me. And I said, you know, I have to go. I said, I've achieved everything I've wanted to do here. And just so you know, like, when I talked about my last chapters about Indiana and all these different places, there's always something in your head. And go with that, people. When a bell rings in your head or something happens in your heart and you say, I need to be challenged more, uncomfortable is the word we should strive to be comfortable for. Because when you're comfortable, you need to be uncomfortable. And I had done it. I did everything I said I was going to do in Acapulco. And I didn't want to grow old, and I didn't want to be a lounge act in Vegas. And not that there's anything wrong with Vegas, because we're going to talk about you, Engelbert Humperdinck and Wayne Newton. You're amazing people. You're legends. I just didn't want to be a singer and to be cute and entertaining like that anymore. I guess for me, I was ready to be challenged. I sat, had my tequila, and I said, I want to go into business. I want to take this talent of singing and bringing people together, and I want to be able to figure out how to recreate myself. And that was probably one of the most difficult things I'd ever have to do in my life, to actually say, if I'm not going to be a singer and get all this attention, and every time I walked into a room, I was the star. Everybody wanted to invite me to their parties, their villas. Everybody loved that we always made the room special together. That was really hard. That was really a tough decision. For me to let that go was something that I, probably one of the most difficult things I'd ever have to look at in my life of what's going to happen to me if I let this great gift. And yes, singing was an amazing gift to me. I loved it. I still love singing. But when people ask me now with what I do with cancer, and we'll get to that in the chapters, but I will tell you, they ask me, do you miss singing? And I say, you know what? I am singing the greatest song of my life now because I'm changing the world. I'm still singing. It's just a different song, and maybe the notes have changed a little bit. So when I left Acapulco, it was my sunset that made me realize you'll be okay. I said, what do I do next? So that's where the word PR, public relations. I thought, I'd be really good at PR. Wasn't sure exactly what that meant. Then got it. We kept our place in L.A., went back to L.A. And then I met, as I said before, Victoria McMahon, met all these people, and Errol Rappaport, and I met some great people. I met friends of my future friend, Andre, which we'll talk about. So all these people I met in Acapulco and in Mexico and Mexico City, they became part of my life and my next journey to L.A. And when I went back home to L.A., I wasn't sure what I was going to do then. And I had some money. And I had this time in my life that I really wasn't sure what the next door was going to be. And trust me, people, if you're listening, that's okay. It's like when you ask some young person, what are you going to be when you grow up? Don't ask that question. That's so silly. They're going to change their mind 10 times before that ever happens. So, but it's okay to dream. Dream it all. So I ended up meeting a gentleman by the name of Andre Caracco. Andre, if you're listening, I hope you're smiling. Because I met his girlfriend's parents in Acapulco, and they said, hey, we have this crazy guy, he lives in LA, he's in the movie business, he works for Sony Pictures, Columbia TriStar, and that was like 25 years ago. They introduced me to Andre, and just so you all know, he's still, 25 years later, at Columbia TriStar, Sony Pictures. Andre, you are my inspiration of somebody that if you stick with it and you stay long enough in show business, you end up running the studio. And he's now one of the head people in the studio within marketing. So I really, really am proud of you. But Andre had introduced me to his boss, and her name was Ellen Crona. And Ellen, this story is great, people. Ellen came to me and said, Thomas, I heard you have some time off. You're not sure what to do next. She said, listen, I am doing publicity. You know, I'm a senior person at the studio, head of publicity, and I can't take all this time off. And my mom is really sick and dying of stage 4 cancer and doing chemo. And somebody needs to help take her to get a chemo every day. And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm not sure yet what I'm going to do yet with my life. And I said, sure. She said, well, stop by the house and meet my mom. She's a little crazy. And she said, you'll have to meet her and let's see what happens. And so I go and meet her mom. Dory, I know you're listening in heaven, so I hope to God you're pissing your pants. So Dory was so funny. I get there. Dory was this hippie. She were like Harvard, Yale degrees, 2 degrees. She was so super smart. It was crazy. And I start talking to her, everything else. And Ellen, if you're listening, and Gingy, that's the other daughter, Janice. I left the room, and you know, of course, Ellen tells me later, oh, my mother just thought you were horrible. There was nothing about you she liked. You were so waspy. You were so like Bostonian and, you know, clean cut. And she just thought, there's no way this will ever work. Well, she said, Mom, too bad. I don't have anybody else that will do it. So for the next couple of months, Dory and I, we shared this amazing story. I would pick her up in my CJ7 black Jeep with no top on it. That was like 10 feet high. We had big mudders because that was my dream back then, to have a Jeep. I would literally have to pick her body up, put her in the Jeep, and I'd say, Dory, just wave to people like we're in a parade. And I even brought her to buy her first wig that looked like Pippi Longstocking and had purple in it. And I'll never forget, Ellen and her sister Janice were like, oh my God, what have you done to our mother? We laughed. We laughed and we laughed and we laughed. And I thought, if this woman is sick and she's not well, let's laugh. Let's make the best of it. That's the really first time I'd ever worked with somebody or been with somebody with cancer at this stage. We would go to the hospital to Cedars, I think. I'd take her to Cedars for chemo. One day, I got to share this because it's a great story. One day we're in the elevator and this really, really attractive man was in the elevator with his wife. And we leave the elevator and of course, Dory said hello to him because he was really handsome. And we leave the elevator and Dory goes, wasn't he handsome? I said, oh, he was. I said, do you know who that was? And she goes, have no idea. I said, his name is Rob Lowe. and Rob Lowe was bringing his wife to the hospital because she had cancer. So weird, all these years later, he's the guy from West Wing. He is like the man. And Rob, you have never grown old. I want to know what vitamins you're on, and I will see you again. So at that point, we had so much fun, laughter, doing all this stuff together. And I loved Dory. She was such, and still is, an amazing woman. This was the ending of her life. But the memories of that and the laughter, and Janice and Gingy and Andre, they'd all put me together because Andre introduced me. It was awesome. We had a lot of fun. When she had passed away, the last thing she said to me was, Thomas, promise me. Because both my daughters, Ellen and Janice, will not have anybody left then. No dad and not me. Would you promise me you keep an eye on them and be their adopted brother? I said, Dory, you got a deal. I promise you they will be my adopted sisters forever. And guess what? They came to my 50th. Don't tell anybody that was my 50th. But they came to my 50th. Introduced them to everybody in my family, and they have been my adopted sisters. And I love them with all my heart, and I always will, and their children. So that was a really great journey then. And then from that, I was like, okay, I gotta work now. I gotta get a job. What am I gonna do? I remember when I told you about meeting Victoria McMahon and trying to do stuff in LA, you know, Victoria was so kind to me. Oh my goodness, she introduced me to Merv Griffin, Kathy and Rick Hilton. That's how I met Paris Hilton as a little kid and told her to grow up and change the world and be a good person. That's where I met Barry Peel, who was in real estate as a young kid. Now he's the guy in L.A. that sold Madonna and every movie star their home. He's the king of real estate. Watching him literally grow up to become this amazing businessman who has just changed Hollywood. Congratulations to you, Barry. All of these people that I met during that time, I look back and it's so fun. You know, my friend invited me to go to the Ellen show when she was still with Disney, and I sat next to her girlfriend she was dating at the time. What was her name? Anne something? I forget. But I'm sitting there right there, and it was so great because Gil Unger, Gil, if you're listening, God bless you. You produced the show. We became friends because you were a musician, had your band. So see, people, music always brings people together. So Gil Unger, he was doing the Ellen show. He was doing a couple other shows. He did all those Whit Thomas and Unger productions with Golden Girls and all those shows. He was part of that. And to this day, we're still good friends. And I love Gil Unger. He did 10 Things I Hate About You, the movie. He's in all this great stuff. And watching him grow has been amazing. And just so you know, Ellen, if you're listening, I still have the script from the episode of your show that you autographed and gave to me. And who would have ever known all those years later, from Disney to that horrible experience, to having your own show now and all the things you're doing to help people. It was great meeting you, and it was great being a part of that. And so you too, Gil. Andre Caracco, now with the Sony Pictures Columbia, we're still amazing friends, and his beautiful partner, and I love them. And all of these folks from LA truly became part of these new chapters. Because of Acapulco in LA, I got invited to be the opening act for Engelbert Humperdinck. Please release me, let me go, for I will never let you know. Oh my God, Engelbert, Ange, I love you. You're the first one that introduced me to Opus, the wine, and loved it. Engelbert, you taught me, and your son, you taught me truly what it is to be a legend. You, I admire, I just adore. You have done so much. You have changed the world. You were part of all of that Rat Pack, from Tom Jones to Wayne Newton, and I worked with Wayne later on, I'll tell you, but just to be part of a little sliver of the gentleman you are and what you taught me and the kind soul you are, thank you, Engelbert Humperdinck. Thank you for letting that be amazing. The show business side, it was really bizarre, but I actually said, again, where do I go to change and how do I make a different thing? So a friend of mine had said he was working with the Oscars and the Emmys. And I thought, oh, that would be so cool to work for the Oscars, the Emmys. That would be so amazing. So I went for my first interview, the Emmys. Mark, if you're listening, Mark, oh my God, you gave me my first break. I showed up to my audition. And Mark goes, Thomas, you got a Louis Vuitton bag and Gucci shoes on. He says, the average person here working production can't afford, you know, your left shoe. Why would you want this job? I said, because I want to learn everything you can teach me. And I said, and I don't want your job. I just want to learn. I want to look back at it years from now and say, I did the Emmys, the Oscars. I did the Kennedy Honors. I just want that chance to learn something different in my life. Well, again, you're listening out there, people, because I was honest and I spoke from my heart, he gave me the job. And my first job was schlepping coffee, water, dressing rooms, you name it, I did whatever he said. I had a blast. I learned, I watched backstage, it was fun. And then the next year they asked me to work backstage and help with the dressing rooms and the celebrities and making sure they got on stage. I was one of those people, I hope you're listening, that had the headphone set with the little walkie-talkie. And back then, if you had your own personal headphone set, that means you were important. That means you could hear everything happening on the actual shoot. So on the Emmys and the Oscars, they'll go, stage left, 5, 4, 3, 2, and go. And then you hear the editing, and then you hear the other people. Then you hear the producer. That everything's happening in your head at the same time. The red carpet. It was so awesome. It actually changed my life to be part of that. I'll never forget that day when I was that second year, this woman taps me on the shoulder. She has a scarf on her head. She taps me on the shoulder and goes, "Hello, are you Thomas?" And I turn around. I'm like, "Yes." And oh my God, you won't believe it, people. It was Cher. Everybody was nervous. Cher was coming backstage to do the sound check, and Cher was it. Michael J. Fox, all the stars were coming. But she did, and oh my God, she was absolutely one of the sweetest, sweetest people I've ever met in my life. Beautiful inside and out. The person with the scarf on the head and with the coat on, humble, down to earth. Now, the person that came out of the dressing room, that was a whole nother share. She was completely different than the woman that went in, but still the same heart and soul. So it was great working with her. It was fun. That was for me, meeting all those folks. Oh, my goodness. I'm trying to think of the last couple of things to tell you about L.A. that were great for me. One was Fran Drescher. If you're listening, Fran, you were friends with a friend of mine, Michael Toomis, and you asked us to house it. Now, for every one of you who don't know, Fran Drescher was the nanny. She's the funny one with the laughter. And Fran, oh my God, we didn't meet, but I did babysit your dogs at your house. It was really cool. I know I'll meet you one day. And Mike Toomis, when you asked me to help with the dog sitting, you had a piano. You asked me if I could write a song about kids. And I sat down at that piano and I wrote one of my first songs for children on that piano. Like a room in a house, they need your love and human touch. Find the light when it's dark. Give the children a piece of your heart. I'm not like you, you're not like me, but still together we can hope they'll be. No more pain and no more fears. Let's wipe away those awful tears. We belong in this world together, fighting strong to make our children better. We belong in this world together, fighting strong. And oh my God, we must keep holding on. Why can't you and I take our place in this world, that's you and me, to help the children see, be it good or bad, happy or sad, we must keep holding on, for we belong. I remember it like it was yesterday. That song that I wrote on the piano, everyone, just so you know, that was given to Mike Toomis by a woman by the name of Rosie O'Donnell. So Rosie, I've never been able to sing that song to you or tell you about this story, but I do want you to know one day I will meet you and I would be honored to give you that song and let you know I wrote it on your piano. Yes, people, these are the stories that I literally feel like I could explode because there's so much inside of me that I just want to share, and I feel so lucky and so fun and so fortunate. And all of these things, people say to me, "Dude, are you making this stuff up?" And I'm like, "I swear I'm not making it up. I cannot tell you how lucky I am that I can share these stories." You know, Victoria McMahon, do you remember? You were the first one that was teaching me about television, and we came up with an idea before there was anything called reality TV. Remember, it was you, Johnny Carson's wife, all these women that are all the ex-wives of all these rich, famous people from Hollywood, and we came up with an idea to do a TV show called Let's Do Lunch. And it was about all of you women sitting around a table at the Polo Lounge talking about your lives, the dysfunction, the divorces, everything. And we already wrote The Wives of Jersey, of D.C., New York. We already wrote that show long before it even happened. Wow. Sometimes it takes a little time. But it was kind of fun that we talked about that. And her amazing daughter, Catherine, I'll never forget teaching you piano. Your father, Ed McMahon, singing Shaboom Shaboom with us. And who would have known? You know, back then with Star Search and everything else he was doing. Oh, what was it? Yeah, Star Search. That was before American Idol. So, fun stories. Last thing, well, there's a lot more going on there, but there's two things. I was asked to do a music video. I didn't know what a music video was back in those days. But I was asked to do a music video, and it was this girl that was a singer that used to sleep in her car because she was so poor. And she said, "You know what? I'd love you to meet my friend here who's agreed to do the music video." So she introduces me to Sean Penn. I'm laughing because Sean Penn, wow, what an actor, what a producer, director. And they had been dating. So I met Sean Penn because I was a PA on the set. When we took a break from the music video, I said to this girl, I said, you know what? You're going to go far. I said, you have a really good heart. You have a really good soul. And I said, I don't know if my opinion matters, but I will tell you this. When somebody's good in the inside, it shows on the outside. And you're going to do fun stuff. I was wearing a white jean jacket. It cost me a lot of money. It was a Guess jean jacket. And I said, here's a marker. I said, would you do me a favor? On the back of my coat, write whatever you want, because one day, this jacket is going to be worth a lot of money. She drew an angel with wings, and she said to Thomas, and I was meant for you. And her name was Jewel. And that was her favorite first hit song. And I was meant for you. So Jewel, if you're listening, I still have that coat. Thank you. That was an amazing memory. So folks, with this chapter, there's so many things I've probably left out. A lot of things. I've tried to thank as many people as possible and tried to put as much fun in there to see how life just keeps on moving. Making it, wow. Every single time I tell a story of how the dots connect and how people connect and how we come together. I left doing the Emmys, and that same production company had been hired to do the Kennedy Honors. Now, if none of you know this, the Kennedy Honors is where the President of the United States attends in Washington, D.C. They honor the greatest artists, from dancers, singers, musicians, poets, and they do it on the stage of the Kennedy Center. And it's the most brilliant people, an award ceremony. And I was asked to go to Washington to do this show after the Emmys. And I thought, oh my God, that'll be so much fun. And if you all recall this, I told you in my first episode that the first song I ever wrote was for missing children. And the person I met when I was 12, 13, was a woman by the name of Susan Davis. And she lived in Washington, D.C. So here you go, people. Let's connect the dots. I'm going to Washington. I picked up the phone. I called Susan Davis. I said, I'm coming to Washington to do the Kennedy Honors. And this is 20 years later, folks. And she goes, Thomas, stay at my house and let's spend some time while you're doing the Kennedy Honors. I would love that. So, folks, I am packing my bags. I am going from Beverly Hills to Washington, D.C. to go do the Kennedy Honors and to see this woman I hadn't seen in 20 years and gave me my first break as a 13-year-old for the National Center for Missing Children, and I'm going to finally see her again. And who would have ever thought all these years later, again, it's called networking. It's called always, always never forget the people in your life that help change it and always keep communication open. It's called networking. It's called building friendships. And I packed my bags, and guess what? I'm on my way to go do the show in Washington, D.C., folks. And when I tell you what happens there, it will blow your mind.
If you enjoyed that song and would like to support Thomas Cook's music and ongoing podcast, please visit iTunes, where you can purchase Thomas's album, The Gift of Words and Music. For more information and to book Thomas as a speaker at your next event, please visit thomascookdc.com.